Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on the part of the world that you're calling in from. My name is Amit Dhingrani, and I am very pleased to be your host for our weekly Global Awaken call today. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls are really to share stories and to tell stories. These stories are here to help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while also fostering our own inner transformation. Today, our special guest speaker is none other than Jared Levy, and he's someone that really embodies our theme and is going to share quite a bit about his experience, both in the social world as well as, this idea of finding a teacher. A guru, and he's going to speak from his own personal experience, and then we also have Birju Pandya, who is going to be our moderator today, so we're pretty excited about that. Welcome to our call. The way our call will work is I'm going to turn things over to Birju here in a few minutes, who's going to share some of his thoughts. He'll introduce Jared a little bit more formally, and then he'll engage in a deep dialogue with him. And then around the top of the hour, we'll roll into a Q&A and circle of sharing, where we're going to invite all of our callers to share their own reflections and questions. And so thought we would just sort of jump right into it. Birju.
Thank you so much, Amit. Good morning to everyone from Berkeley, California. Our guest today is Jared Levy. And Jared's recent history, he can be seen from multiple hats, from my understanding. Now, on one side, he's a social entrepreneur. On another side, he's a practicing yogi in the world, and he's got plenty of hats outside of that, from a professor at the University of Colorado to a board member of several organizations. He's also running his own company, and he's here today to share with us his journey of personal transformation. Thank you so much for joining us, Jared.
Absolutely. Really, really nice to be here with you and everybody. Thanks for the warm introduction.
Yes, I'd love to dive right into it and just go straight to the space of what I'd call turning points. You were running a music company not too long ago. What was your mind state at the time?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think it was in a place of attachment. I came out of college. I was highly recruited by some different ad agencies and ended up going on a trip to Costa Rica to kind of figure out which ad agency I wanted to be with. And then I was staying at a surf resort, and they talked me into staying there and just doing the marketing there. So I actually lived in Costa Rica for a year. Moved to LA and was trying to find my path there in LA. And I think that I got kind of gobbled up in that LA soup, I was in the TV and film for a while and then was in music. And music, I mean, I've always had a real love for music as a fan and other things. My wife's a musician, but, when we started having some success and, I think the ability to go, to any clubs in LA and see any musicians we wanted and kind of, have the VIP music treatment in LA, I felt my ego, I guess, myself get pretty attached to that lifestyle and, started making really good money in the music industry, which wasn't easy at that time. And, I think I was in a place of self-congratulation and having a lot of fun, in the LA music scene. And I started, though, I've got to say, in my heart, I mean, in my head, it felt right. Ray is very ambitious. In my head, it really felt right. In my heart, there was something a little off. It's like when you know something's a little sour in your gut, and I just, there was a feeling going through it that maybe this wasn't the right place for me.
Hmm. So you're in this space of ostensible success, and yet it seems like an itch that you're looking to scratch. So where was that space in which you felt like, this is a perspective I hadn't seen before?
Right. Yeah. Good question. Where's a perspective I hadn't seen before? You know, I think it was I came out of a meeting, a music meeting, where I was trying to get a musician, a young musician I really believed in, signed to a label. And I put on my salesman hat and went in there and, you know, came out and felt like I crushed the meeting, and then went for a surf. And I was sitting on my board, kind of just staring at the horizon. And that's, you know, that's my typical meditation out there in Venice Beach. And there was literally a sick to my stomach kind of gut feeling that something needed to change, that, you know, I knew how to be successful in there, like you said, ostensible success, but that there was something that needed to change for me to kind of live into my dharma, I guess, to come be true with what I was meant to do on this planet. And that was the feeling. And then what really woke me up, I mean, that was, you know, that was like a very tangible, kind of palpable, I can still see that moment. But I was turned on to this conference, this Community Social Venture Network, and went down there. And what I saw was that you could, you know, really do well and do good at the same time. And that was the feeling I knew that I was missing, that kind of sense of fulfillment or purpose in my work.
Mm. Can you share a bit more about Social Venture Network? It's one of the hats that you wear, I see.
Sure, yeah. It's been quite a journey there, coming in as this kind of, you know, wandering guy from the music industry. He wasn't sure if he still wanted to be there. And it was actually one of my best friends from college, from University of Colorado Boulder. His dad used to come into Boulder, and, you know, we'd all be partying up on the hill, and he'd be the cool dad that would come up and play music. And he was always talking about this group of old hippie businessmen that were going to change the world. He was like always coming into Boulder and talking about it. And, you know, they were, he was traveling around the country in this RV at the time. He actually is still part of Social Venture Network and owns a great bean and rice chips company called Beanfields Chips. I'm still very close with him, but I was in his backyard, and, he told me that, you know, again, this is 7 years later after college. And he says, there's this Community Social Venture Network. You need to go. Your answers are there. And I can't wait to drop you into this community. So I show up in San Diego, paid a bunch of money to be there. And I just didn't know that I'd never been with people like this. I didn't know people like this existed, that literally I had always divided the world into for-profit businesses and non-profit businesses. And I didn't realize that you could really create a successful for-profit impact business. That was like foreign to me at this time. I always thought about it like philanthropy. You know, I was raised Jewish and raised with tzedakah, and then it kind of got into Buddhism and it turned into more like philanthropy. Was kind of, okay, I can make money over here and give money over here, and that's where my impact's going to be. You know, Social Venture Network completely proved me wrong. It really was, you know, a group that was having serious impact on the world while doing really well as entrepreneurs. You know, it started, I mean, to give you a tiny bit of history about Social Venture Network, not just my experience there, but it started 30 years ago, two guys, Wayne Silby, who started Calvert Fund, which is one of the most, you know, conscious kind of impact investment mutual funds. You can get into many mutual funds. And then Josh Mailman, who is like a saint, angel kind of philanthropist, and has started, you know, Threshold and some other things. And they're walking around in the woods and they're like, you know, I know we can have more impact than we're having right now. And they write this letter and send it out to 150, 200 of the most, you know, influential people in the world that they could think of. And I think about 80 or 90 people came to this ranch, and they spent a few days there. And some of the people there are like Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry's, Anita Roddick from Body Shop, Ram Dass, you know, others. And they talked about, how do we leverage our influence, money, and businesses to change the world? And that was how Social Venture Network started 30 years ago. Mm. And now, you know, 30 years later, I mean, it's unbelievable what has come out of that. Benefit Corporation was born out of it. American Sustainable Business Council, BALI, which is the Business Association of Local Living Economies. You know, I could go on and on, but yeah, that's, I mean, really, really amazing community and very, a spiritual community, a community that's really been able to, it's kind of a place you show up and don't talk about your successes. You talk about your failures and you talk about, you know, maybe what are some things that you wouldn't want to share with like the person you're trying to get a job with, you know? And digging into that a little bit. So it's a major convergence of spirituality, transparency, and business at kind of a, in a way that I've never seen before.
So that's a place that I want to dive deeper into. But before I do that, so the context of me specifically asking this question is my own interface with SVN. And one of the hats that I also wear is my work with RSF Social Finance. And you may know that one of our newest team members is Deb Nelson, who used to run
Social
Venture Network.
Congratulations, by the way. She is amazing.
Thank you. I have been very moved thus far. So to dive into that spirit side of the coin, you alluded to a little bit earlier your own upbringing of different forms of spirit traditions. And I was wondering if you can share a bit more about that Jewish upbringing, Buddhist upbringing. How does this fit into your own emerging inquiry about, you know, what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah. interesting question. I guess it's all, as Ram Dass says, in the moment, you know, be here now. And so at some point in this life, I could say I was a Jew, you know, a Reformed Jew, with bar mitzvah confirmed, you know. My wife actually converted to be Jewish, even though it was her idea, and you know, I loved her for it, but it wasn't as important to me. So that was kind of how I started out my life. I then, in college, I think, got so into Buddhism and philosophy, I kind of walked away from the idea of Judaism. I mean, still very culturally Jewish, but wasn't really practicing. I mean, love Shabbat, love the idea of, you know, of relaxation on a, you know, Friday and Saturday and kicking back with family. But Buddhism felt more in line with my heart. And then I, you know, through reading so much Ram Dass, I really got pulled into, you know, into the religion of Hinduism. And, you know, so I always joke with some people around me that I'm kind of a Jubadoo, that, you know, there's a Buddhist in me that just wants to be comfortable with the suffering in the world. There's a Hindu in me that wants to, you know, just love it away. And there's a Jew in me that's got to do something about it. And, right now the amount of suffering in the world, and I see it as a very symptomatic of, you know, people not being compassionate towards each other and themselves and the planet. It's kind of the Jew that's winning out right now because I'm feeling like I got to do something about it.
Well, so you've alluded to your connection with Ram Dass. I'm wondering if you can share a bit more about where that connection stemmed from and perhaps a little bit about Ram Dass as well.
Sure. Yeah. I was attracted to Ram Dass when I was about 13. Started kind of being interested, you know, in psychedelics at that point, was more interested in that side of Ram Dass, and had read Be Here Now, and it just really turned me on. I loved how it kind of had, you know, the first part of the book was this story that really resonated with me. I mean, he was raised in this, you know, ambitious Jewish home with a probably very loving but over-nurturing, you know, a Jewish mother and a like really successful Jewish dad, which I could relate to in a big way. And in the middle of it, like, I've always been into visual art. He's got all this psychedelic art in the book that really kind of you can meditate on, and it brings the story to life. And then the third part of the book is the Karma Cookbook. And it's like, you know, a cookbook for karmic living, and it's really kind of a how-to. So no one had really laid it out for me like that, so I just really got pulled in fast, and then had been gobbling up pretty much everything that he had written, or, you know, any of his speeches at Naropa and all of that stuff that he'd done over his lifetime. And, you know, I was coming out of the music industry, moving into guru, fast forward, you know, now to when I'm about 26, 27. And we did a really great job for a dear friend of mine who was throwing a music festival and yoga festival in LA. And he said, I want you to go have lunch with someone. He knew my love for Ram Dass. And it was Raghu Marcus, who's the executive director of Ram Dass's foundation. And he's got an amazing podcast as well called Mind Rolling. Just to give him a little plug, really fantastic podcast. And Raghu and I, you know, fell in love immediately at lunch and we're talking. And then that's when I found out that Ram Dass was actually, you know, kind of held the spiritual heart of Social Venture Network for the first 15 years of it. And I was, you know, all these worlds started colliding. It was like, okay, now, you know, my business world, which is really being turned on by Social Venture Network, is now coming together with my spiritual path with Ram Dass. And it just started lighting up, and, you know, the synchronicities were kind of, you couldn't ignore them. And so I've since then, and like I said, I was more into the psychedelic side of Ram Dass. And as of more recent, I'd say over the last six, seven years, I've got way more into the, after going to India many times and visiting the ashram of his guru named Karoli Baba, and you know, spending more time with the Bhagavad Gita and the Ramayana, I've gotten way more into the Hindu side. And what, you know, I had always read those texts as kind of like, oh, these are some just fantastic stories, you know, that are ridiculous, just like the Bible and all. And then I really started, you know, I read his book Pathways to God, which explains the Bhagavad Gita in a way that applies the story to your inner work, the fight that all of us and the journey that all of us have in this lifetime. And it was just, it tied it all together for me. So now I, you know, have gone way more over to that side. I can talk more about Ram Dass and his journey if you'd like as well.
I'm curious. So you mentioned that you've had multiple trips to India over the last several years, and as you move more towards the love practices, or I don't know what you'd call it, but moving away from more of the psychedelic approach, what have been your insights that come from this new form of practice?
My insights that have been from, I think one of the biggest is that it's about the journey, not the destination. You know, I think that guy, you know, there's plenty of people here in the West that are kind of, you know, looking for quote unquote enlightenment and look at it as a destination, like across the river, that if I just meditate, you know, 20 minutes a day, I'm going to reach enlightenment. If I wear my mala beads and my robes or whatever, I'm going to, you know, and it's just not about that. It's about the journey. It's about the practice. The spiritual work is all just tuning, you know, to make it so that as you are engaging in your daily life with your wife, your best friend, your employees, your customers, whomever, that's the work. That's the real spiritual work, is how you show up. You know, so for me, I think that one of the biggest insights was just that it wasn't a dichotomy as much as a convergence as to where my life has had to lead. I'll also say that, you know, that there's, I think, some insights in kind of medicine and poison for me. I have a very hyperactive kid growing up, and, you know, had definitely like a bit of anger inside me, I think. And it's like easy to come out, kind of a short fuse. And, you know, through practice and I still work on this all the time. But I've been able to kind of, you know, turn that poison into medicine with passion, and really, you know, with my clients and with people I work with, it comes out. I mean, every single person I'm there for, I am really there. I'm really passionate about their work, and it's not some like sales pitch. It's like, I really do care. And I really, you know, that's coming from a place that could, that's just kind of taking that energy. And it's like a, you know, a Tai Chi or a Qigong or something, where you're just flowing with it and spinning it out in a more healthy way. And so anyways, yeah, those are a few, you know, kind of insights that I've had. But as I said, I mean, I'm just practicing like the rest, you know. It's an ongoing journey.
So this word practice, you know, I hear you speaking to practice as what you do, you know, day to day. It's what the chopping wood, fetching water approach to life is. And I'm wondering, beyond that, do you have a practice, something that enables you to bring yourself in that day to day, perhaps with more intention than you would otherwise?
Yeah, I do have a meditation practice. I do quite a bit of yoga, at least 4 days a week. I have a pretty disciplined surf schedule. I think those things, I mean, like I said, when I grew up, I was a jock, and I've got a lot of energy, and so I've got to get that out somehow. Or bring it to, you know, bring that passion to the work that I'm doing. But those things are kind of the practice. You know, a lot of it as well is in my meditation practice, just saying the name. I mean, Ram. It really, that's what it comes down to, and that's a teaching from Neem Karoli Baba and from Shyam Sundar Das Baba, who's another I've realized being that I had the unbelievable blessing of spending time with a few months ago. And so I have a mala that kind of I work and just with the name Ram. And, you know, Neem Karoli Baba used to always talk about Subek, all is one. And really It just comes back to source. You know, everything comes back to source. So for me, it's that practice of getting back to source, and there's kind of these. I sat in this wonderful workshop a few weeks ago with this lady, Sarah Marshank, who's got a book and a workshop called Selfistry. It was amazing. That kind of broke the world into these three areas of, you know, we've got ourselves and ourself, our ego, what a lot of people refer to it as, but there's many selves in there. There's like your mom's voice, you know, there's your girlfriend's voice. There's all these different selves in there. And then, you know, that's usually you're showing up as one of those selves. And really, when you can take a breath and with meditation, you can become a witness, you know, you can start to witness that self, and you can step back. In Buddhism, they call it spy consciousness. You know, Sharon Salzberg is always talking about this. And then, you know, you can step back and it's okay, you know, without judgment, you can see that you're that self. And you can be okay with that and just acknowledge it and be aware of it. And then try to work on, okay, how do you kind of Tai Chi that poison into medicine with that self, you know? Which is a really interesting practice. And then there's this third obvious, you know, self, witness, and then there's source. You know, it's just, it's one, it's love, Ram, God, you know, Jesus, whatever you want to call your, you know, deity. That's my practice, is just moving more towards source, you know, in
so
that way.
I'd love to jump in there, Jared, because to me, So I feel blessed to be able to have conversations with folks who can name this sort of thing, but rarely do they run their own companies, are part of a scene that is grounded in action. So here you are telling me about source and witnessing, and then you go out and you do stuff in the world, your Jewish side, if you will. So I'm curious, when you think about impact, right, like all this whole world of impact, what does impact mean to you as somebody who has the perspective you do?
It's a great question. And, of course, now I'm finding a way to be at comfort with the tree, with the guys cutting the trees outside of my house. let me find a different spot. Yeah, you know, impact to me, well, let's see. I break it down into a couple of things. I think at first, when I started learning about this work and really getting turned on through Social Venture Network and other venues, I thought impact is just, how do I make this world a better place? Like, how do I alleviate some suffering on the planet? That's really it. And most of the suffering, well, I think that, you know, and that is unbelievable work. I mean, I have so many colleagues and visionaries and these that are doing unbelievable work in alleviating suffering on the planet. You know, whether they're working in poverty, healthcare, hunger alleviation, you know, many, obviously the world is in a tough place right now. And I think as I've spent more time, I've wanted to get more to the root, you know, so impact to me is that we've got a lot of clients that are alleviating some of these symptomatic sufferings that's going on around the world. But then, you know, really, as I said before, it's there's a base level where I think most humans, their resting state is self-interest right now. And if we can alter that resting state towards compassion, you know, some of these symptoms are going to melt away. It's not going to happen overnight. This is a long-term plan, but we really have to rethink how we're showing up as human beings and as society and as companies. And so to me, impact now has become, you know, A, helping, you know, really expand and raise money and, you know, help build community and donations and all those kind of things around these amazing, you know, nonprofits and foundations and companies that are alleviating suffering. But it's also, how do I build more compassion at much larger levels? So how do you bring conscious content that can turn people on? How do you introduce them to teachers? What's the tip of the spear kind of marketing that can introduce, you know, the most extreme, which would be like, how do I get ISIS to listen to a Ram Dass, you know, love everyone meditation? Like, that's, you know, that's probably reaching a little bit, but, you know, I think you take my point. So there's some thing projects working on now, more in conscious content to kind of start to water the roots a little bit rather than just, you know, prune the hedges and help grow the trees. We're really trying to go deep, and there's some amazing networks we're involved with that. You know, Unify is one of them. A good friend of mine, Ramian, runs. And then, you know, MindPod Network is this podcast network that has all these amazing teachers like, you know, Krishna Das and Roshi Joan Halifax and Sharon Salzberg and Jack Kornfeld and Tara Brock. And so all these different teachers. And what now where we're going to move with that is, you know, creating more content where, what are the access points to people that are underserved in this area? A lot of times we think of underserved communities as, oh, that's maybe not well-developed or a third world, you know, country or something like this. And we need to get in and develop, or they're underserved. So I think of underserved as, I mean, some of those countries are the most served, the most spiritual, the best human beings that I've met on the planet. And really, where the work needs to be done is here, you know. And
yeah,
I mean,
who's really poor?
Yeah, exactly. What is wealth? Yeah. gets back to attachment.
So are you referring to your work with your agency, Guru Media, is that right?
Yes. Guru Media Solutions, that's exactly what we do. But also, you know, on the board of Social Venture Network, we're doing quite a bit of work there. And then being on Ram Dass's board and really, you know, Ram Dass is really looked at on the planet as kind of a Baba of spiritual teachers. He's 85 years old. He's living out in Maui. Anyone who's on this call, I would highly recommend to go to Maui in either April or December. He has retreats twice a year. It's just a life-changing experience. I think there's one coming up in April. But that's the work I'm referring to. With Guru, you know, in terms of expanding my own impact, I've found that, you know, I could be a consultant and help a few, you know, visionary CEOs, but to truly kind of have the impact that I'd like to have, or, you know, I needed to gather some like-minded souls with skill sets that could help build community around some of these ideas. And so, you know, I've been extremely lucky with attracting, you know, amazing people that some are, you know, big agency expats that kind of got tired of working on, you know, Chevron or something like that and said, yeah, okay, I'll take a 10% pay cut, actually love what I do and make a difference on the planet. I mean, to me, it's like these questions are they're not even questions, but it's, you know, people get in golden handcuffs and you've worked really hard for your career and you're climbing through that bureaucratic structure and you're going to get to the next rung. And I always tell my friends when I'm talking to them, they're making, you know, crazy money and some big New York agency and they're working 16-hour days. And I say, you know, just look at your boss and look at your boss's boss and tell me if that's the life you want. If it is, then stay with where you're at and don't complain to me anymore. And if it's not, then come work with me.
It so makes sense. And yet, you know, I've been seeing this field of socially minded business, and you know what I hear you describe Social Venture Network starting out as 30 plus years ago. You know, we're now talking about this behemoth that's got, you know, billions of dollars flowing in. It's seen as a viable career path, not necessarily this thing that you're inquiring into as you go on your own journey of shift. And so I'm wondering, to what extent do you feel like the preservation of that? I mean, I get the sense that for you, the work in the world is very much an extension of the work that you're doing on yourself. And where is that found in the world of social venture now?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, I think that, you know, that was the original kind of thought of Social Venture Network. It was two things. It was, you know, not only coming together to have, you know, to expand impact, kind of a 1+1=3 type scenario with some of these leaders, but how do we empower these leaders? How do we support them to go deeper in their practices, not just as business people, but as humans, to be better leaders? And that's real work that needs to be done. You know, one of our clients, and it might even, I think it's how we got to know each other, is Dalai Lama Fellows. You know, and they are doing amazing work and have developed this, you know, curriculum to take these aspiring next gen entrepreneurs and put and make them better humans first. You know, not make them better humans, take them through a curriculum that helps with their practices, lays out a methodology, and starts to, you know, build them from the ground up as compassionate leaders with ethics at the core of what they're doing. I mean, there's plenty of incubators out there, right? And as you know, with what you do, and it's a lot of these incubators, the first they come in and they say, oh, you need, you know, back office support, you need marketing. Okay, here's this guy's going to, you know, help you with, mentor you in the, he's an MBA and he's going to, you know, help write your business plan, da, 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 da. And they're right in there and they totally skip over the heart, you know, the most important part of why you're even starting that business. And it's interesting too, I mean, that's just with incubators. When you even back up to education, it's nowhere to be found in our universities and education system. So, you know, Dalai Lama Fellows, they've been, you know, giving these scholarships, and they take these leaders in, and they're working on unbelievable projects around the world. I mean, I've met some of them. It's amazing. And they're now going to move into being more of like a Dalai Lama Leadership Institute, which actually takes it from just doing it with, you know, the fellows, actually bring it to the world to larger corporations, bringing that curriculum to help leaders in larger corporations, and to maybe even help infiltrate the educational system with, you know, compassion as, you know, a focal point of some of your education as you're coming through. So to me, that's kind of like the state of it, where we're at. And there's a few communities that are, you know, if you're lucky enough to kind of, you know, get a glimpse and come into that community, it'll change your life, like Social Venture Network did for me. It's, you know, you started off the call talking about gurus, and they say that, you know, in Hindu tradition, they say that, you know, you might live thousands of lifetimes, and then you get lucky enough to get to just see a picture of your guru, and it pulls you in, you know, and that's, you know, in that lifetime, you're going to, you know, really, you know, do some significant work. The guru is going to help you along to kind of reach new plateaus in your spiritual evolution. And I look at it in a similar way right now, and it's sad that it's like that. It's like, why would this not just be the core of business? Mm. You know, why do we have to catch glimpses of these kind of almost eclectic communities? You know, because, I mean, it's funny to me, the question that you asked, you know, so you run this business, and I hear you talking about Source, and it's like, of course, because that's what it's about. You know, that's what all this is about. Business is just an exchange of value. Business, when it comes down to it, is really love. And that's how it's supposed to be showing up in the world. We've just turned it into something else, just like what we've done with money, you know. Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox for a minute.
Well, this is a soapbox that's welcome on this particular platform. It's funny because from my perspective, there's so many reasons for us to be having a conversation. There's so many hats that you wear, so many places of expertise and insight. And I feel like this particular conversation does not necessarily get the airtime, especially at the explicit level, right? These are the things you say behind closed doors. This is why I'm really doing this work. This is what we're really up to. This is what's in my heart. But somehow out in the open, there's a different ethos of what's shared. And so I really appreciate you going there.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that is what you always get from me, I promise. And you know, when as you're talking about with Guru, you know, I love how you started out that call. I mean, that's a really nice, you know, monologue about Guru. This is a word that you and I both have serious issues with, and I named my company it because of that. I woke up having a dream one night, and I named the company Guru 9 years ago. And, you know, at first, it was kind of a funny thing because everyone was saying, oh, you're the social media guru. You're the digital marketing guru, you know. So then I wake up, guru. And so I named the company Guru Media Solutions. And I remember when I did my first logo exploration, like the guy came back and everything was like, you know, it had a, you know, like a, some dude meditating in like a lotus position and stuff like that. I was like, look, the company is already named Guru. We don't need to go any further that way. Now you got to bring me back, you know, to business, make people think they can actually work with us. We're not just a bunch of hippies running around. And so that was how it started, you know. And then what I found this amazing new meaning for it. And we actually kind of evolved our brand identity, which is some of the work we do, some of my favorite work that we do. And we moved it from Guru Media Solutions, which is still, you know, the LLC, but to We Are Guru. And what I've, you know, in traditionally the word guru is guru self and spirit are the same thing, you know, and I see that with clients. I think my job is best done if I can help facilitate the answers out of the client. If they answer their own problems through our facilitation. I mean, maybe we make it pretty and maybe we, you know, bring some good copywriting and other tactics and things like that to the table. But really, at the heart, like, you created this business. You know, we're working with Kavita right now, an amazing sparkling probiotic drink. They've got kombuchas and stuff like that, and we've been working on an aspirational tagline. And I just sit with the founder, you know, who started mixing, you know, Kavita's in her garage. She's a nutritionist, and there's a magic to that brand. And I just am sitting with her and talking to her about, they've got all the decks. They paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for all these studies and all these things. And that's all great, and it needs to be incorporated. But really, to me, it's about the brand essence. It's about bringing that out of her. So really, she is the guru for her own brand. You know, so We Are Guru is more of a collective wisdom. It's kind of, you know, we've got some great ways to bring it out in people. And then, like I said, beautify and whatnot. But We Are Guru is very literal for me.
So, Jared, I want to dive deeper into that. Because so this is something that's an ethos of Service Space, which is the group behind the Awaken Calls. There's a strong value system around how these esoteric terms like spirituality or consciousness, there's a rubber hits the road component of them that's very micro, everyday, mundane, things like small acts of kindness, things like practices of gratitude that are just minute. You wouldn't even notice it as a friend of mine says, they're hiding in plain sight. And so as you engage in these, you know, pinnacle of the mountain kind of conversations in my mind. I mean, a lot of the people that are listening today, I mean, they would enjoy being in these kinds of calls and these kinds of places, but they're not necessarily in those positions, and yet they want to bring that moment-to-moment kindness, moment-to-moment gratitude. How do you engage in that sort of behavior when you're at the, so to speak, top of the mountain?
Well, you know, it's practice. I hate to just come back to it, but it is. It you know, and I'm not the best at it all the time. You know, I mean, look, I believe that the world, that marketing has gotten a bad name. I think that really it's about it's about digging in and understanding what is authentic to a brand. What is the problem? Why do you exist? Why are you making this world a better place? And if you're not, well, A, I'm not going to work with you probably, or I will and help you find a way to make this world a better place. And so that's the only reason to me for a business to exist. And so when I'm having these high-level conversations, that's a very heart-centered place to start. It's not in the brain, you know. Mm. As far as an insight into my practice, I mean, it's just trying to get back to being heart first and not so, you know, head forward. I mean, you know, if I kept going the way I was going in the music industry, I'd be like a hunchback by the age of 40 because my head leaves so far, you know, like I fall right back into it because that's my resting state. Like someone, you know, I quickly kind of understand, I guess, a room, what a CEO or, you know, an executive director, some visionary sees like 5 years down the road. They've got some vision. They haven't even raised the money yet. They haven't raised their first dollar. And they've got a vision for like a $1 billion company. And they're telling me about that 5 years from now, this is what it's going to be. And so it's really understanding like I have to be able to understand that and that passion coming from them to really do our job well, or else it's just window dressing and tactics, you know. And that's where I think, you know, some marketers just aren't really doing justice. They're finding ways to outsmart consumers, or they're finding ways to shout, you know, at consumers in all kinds of ways, you know, digitally or other means. But they're not necessarily finding how is this business I'm working with, or this visionary, how are they adding value to that person's life? And that's the long-term strategy. Like, that's it right there. You know, and the hard part, you know, for CEOs to get around is, but I gotta have this increase in my quarterly profits for next quarter for my shareholders. And if you operate in that way, which is coming at business from a sense of scarcity and not from a place of abundance, you will fail over the long term. And with the, you know, coming at it from the other way, where you have this long-term vision and you are very true to who are the people that you want to serve on this planet. How are you best going to serve them? Every decision you're making is about, not about how do I cut a dollar out of the manufacturing the product, but how do I better serve that person? How do I give them a better experience on this planet? If you solve that, you're gonna really upset investors in the near term, and you're gonna make a ton of consumers really happy in the long term. And I think that's the future of business. And you know, there's other people out there. I had the pleasure of spending a weekend with Charles Eisenstein, who wrote, you know, Sacred Economics. Unbelievable speaker. And we're in a very hard time right now because we're living in this kind of myth of a world where, you know, attachment to money, attachment to short-term kind of self-interest, things like this. And to get to where we need to be, it's going to get more uncomfortable before it gets comfortable. And it's going to take a lot of people with significant means to take chances, which I don't see as a chance, but I see as you know, kind of bettering society at large. So, you know, this stuff, it can go deep. It can, you know, get, we can focus in on a specific product of a specific brand, or it can start to expand and turn into movement building that will change society. And that's, you know, the place that we're really loving to operate at. That's, you know, in these conversations, it's usually around specific topics that business is bringing to life. But that's, you know, that's where we're spending time. And then we go back as an agency and we've got, you know, certain people who are copywriters and designers and web developers and media buyers and social media, you know, all this kind of, and they, you know, have a certain expertise in areas to then bring, bring that vision to life in their area and bring, and then they get fulfilled, you know, to really even follow that down the path, they get fulfilled because then they are thinking about, okay, my actual client is this visionary who wants to create this vision. So how do I do my job best to bring value to the consumers and to bring value to the visionary? And so all down the line, it's this value exchange. And, you know, again, in the end of the day, it comes back to, you know, what Ram Dass, whatever he says to me is gold, but it's love everyone. You know, it comes back to love.
Ah. Thank you, sir. We're near the top of the hour here. Amit, do you want to open up the phone lines?
Yep. I actually have the queue open now.
I'd love to dovetail as we move towards group participation. I just wanted to touch on one of the pieces that you just mentioned here, Jared. You mentioned the name Charles Eisenstein. And from my standpoint, this is where there's just been some pushing and some questions that come up for me. That once we connect the mindset of business with the mindset of spirit, at least from my perspective, there seems to be a certain set of values that may not be common between the two. And consequently, there seem to be paradoxes that come up at the systems level. For instance, needing to fire people while holding a value of love, or needing to charge people when you value unconditionality, right? It's the nature of the systems within business which are not divinely ordained. And so I'm curious, how do you grapple with that perceived paradox?
It's a great question, a really hard one. I think just to use a concrete example of, you know, for instance, letting people go, and how you do that with love. To me, you know, people are, you know, if it's not right, if it's not a symbiotic relationship for both people involved, for instance, I had someone who was coming up as a project manager, and they didn't really have, we didn't have the time to really mentor them. We had hired them, thought they were further along. They really needed a lot of mentoring. And beautiful soul, really loved them, but just wasn't the right place for them in our company. They would really be served by a larger company, a more hierarchical, you know, vertically integrated company rather than a horizontal company like ours, because they'll be able to learn and get the training that they need to make the jump in their life and their career. So to me, you know, most of the time, I mean, I also will say I've been blessed that financially we haven't really ever had to make cuts. If we're making cuts, it's because there's it's not matching. You know, their need and our need at that time. And the universe usually, you know, tells you when that's the case. My wife usually knows a lot of that before I do, because her intuition is much better. But as I find most women's are. A lot of the sacred economics and the work that Charles Eisenstein talks about, I mean, we're talking about, you know, how do you get politicians to vote in public campaign financing, a system that might ultimately get them fired, get them out of their job? How do you get, you know, wealth holders to bring in a system of sacred economics where they're sharing their wealth without a real tie to, like, quarterly return on investment? I mean, these are, like, we're at a really juicy time right now around that. And you guys at RSF are leading the charge, you know, and I love the work that you all do. I think you're really, you know, making some significant progress in that area around impact investing and how money is used with love. I do think there's more work to do, even, you know, to get a little more radical right now. I think we're in a time that for radical transformation on a number of levels, and I think money is one of them.
So, Jared, with that, this is Amit. You know, I was wondering if you could actually talk about the role that money actually plays in your life and how that's sort of transformed over time as you, you know, as your inner evolution has been sort of moving along this path.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess what it's come to through practice is that it just kind of come to more of a sense of abundance. And I think that's a risky thing to say in a call like this and out in the public, but really, to be transparent, my philosophy is that money, is that the world is abundant and it delivers what you need. Now, that's a very hard thing to say when I'm coming, you know, back from India 2 months ago and to see the widespread poverty and things like that. But personally, for me in my daily life, that's how I operate. And I try to, you know, give to causes that we believe in, try to be very fair with, you know, people that that work with us, and look at money for what it is, which is again, like business, just an exchange of value, and not something to be idolized. You know, I think some of my earlier career with music and whatnot, like I referred to earlier, there was a little bit of attachment to that. And I think there's a lot of what we consider success, you know, tied up in money. And if you can start to have other, you know, I'll go into my marketing speak now, you know, key performance indicators for your own life, for your own success beyond money, you're going to have a lot happier life. You know, people that are chasing the dollar, usually not extremely happy. I'm going to totally murder this, but there was a study done, I think it was a few years ago, I forget by who, but it was of a couple hundred wealth holders. I think wealth ranging from five to like $500 million. So $5 million to $500 million in net worth. And they asked the same questions, the same survey. And I think it was something like 90% of the people were not happy with where they were at. 90%. No matter if you were at 5 million or you were at $500 million, you weren't happy where you were at. And the way that people answered the question most was they wanted to have 20% more than they had right now. And I thought that was just fascinating when I heard that study.
Wow. And I guess, was there something in particular that helped shift your key performance indicators in your life? I mean, I know you had started to dive into some of it earlier in your conversation with Birju, when you were making your transition from the music industry. But I'm just curious if there was like sort of an aha moment where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, when you're looking at your wallet, everything just sort of looks a little bit different, seems a little bit different. That transaction is no more, you know, I'm giving you stuff, but it's moving into something in the realm of love, as you were saying earlier as well.
Well, I think it was really, I'm still really working on this. I think this is one of the biggest, areas of attachment that I'm working with in my life right now. And I actually met this, as I referred to earlier, this Baba. Well, a few years ago, I met a Baba out in India in the jungle, very interesting guy. And then I met someone a few months ago in a similar way. And both of these Babas were so unattached to material wealth or money. It like startled me. It was unbelievable to see somebody. I'd never met anyone that unattached. I mean, there's people who say it and, you know, this kind of thing, but really, really live it and have lived it authentically for, you know, 30, 40 years. That was really eye-opening, and I think had a major kind of evolution in my practice around attachment of money. But, you know, there's definitely a shift for me when I started traveling the world. You know, I think about maybe 15 years ago when I really started traveling and being very interested in kind of more developing countries. And, you know, when you come face-to-face with some of the poverty on the planet, it's hard not to look at your own life and understand how blessed you are. So I think that was also a big jump for me. But yeah, this is something that, you know, to be perfectly honest, I still struggle with and work with every day.
I appreciate you sharing that. And how, you know, outside of attachment and this idea, you know, trying to move this, or I guess to make sure you're not so attached on the material side, what are some areas in your life that are part of these key performance indicators? Because I'm curious just sort of, you know, how you look at, you know, you evaluate the progress of your life, the progress of your thought, and the progress of your well-being and that of your families, you know, over the years.
Sorry, it broke up there for a second. Did you say, how do I evaluate the progress in these areas?
Yeah. You know, so just going back to that the theme of the key performance indicators, right? So what are some of those other things that you use to evaluate your own life? Your family.
Yeah. I think it's hard to put your finger on, but there's this general sense of just fulfillment. In life, it's kind of, you know, how are the people around you doing? How are you helping them in their journeys? How am I helping my clients and the students that I work with and the different boards that I'm on? Like, how am I really showing up? Getting better at you know, being easier on myself and on others, trying not to, you know, come with as much judgment. A lot of this is obviously, I think, the qualitative, but But that's how I'm, you know, constantly thinking about kind of how I'm doing, how, you know, how am I showing up for the people I love, for the people around me, how am I, you know, really expanding my impact on the planet. And do I feel aligned, I think, is a big one. You know, is that feeling of when you're sitting and you're in meditation, I mean, are you really aligned with where you should be right now? You know, my wife, who I've referred to a couple times, she's, you know, amazing at this, because she's got an organization that teaches yoga and mindfulness to kids. It's called We Yogis, W-E-E Yogis. And she is so in alignment with what she's supposed to be doing on this planet. She's so good with kids. And to watch her, you know, she makes these music albums and puts them out, and they're, like, unbelievable at getting kids into yoga, and it makes it really fun for them to get into it. And I just watch her. And so for me, it's kind of emulating some of that. Like, am I really enjoying what I'm doing? Am I really having the impact I want to have? Am I really helping people and showing up the way I want to show up?
It's great. And I love those questions that you're holding for yourself in terms of, you know, am I showing up for the way I want to, and for the people around me? And again, for, am I in alignment? I think those are really, really important questions that, you know, frankly, it's nice to have that check-in with ourselves on a daily basis, just because it's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day and forget where, you know, the direction in which we're hoping to move or trying to move, or even having the universe allow us, pull us in a certain direction. So I really appreciate that. I want to go to one of our callers. And again, if you have a question or a comment for Jared, please push *6 and you'll be entered into our queue. I'm going to go to our next caller.
Hi, this is Kozo from Cupertino. Jared, thank you for this wonderful conversation and for your service and the work that you do. I was really fascinated, and it really resonated with me when you brought up the whole idea of poison and medicine. And it reminds me of a couple of things. Reminds me of pharmakos, the Greek word that means both poison and medicine. They're both the same. And then it also reminds me of compassion, in that, you know, we can't have compassion if there's no suffering. If others aren't suffering, then we don't get the opportunity to express compassion. And so in your work, I'm sensing, you know, maybe it's what you refer to, the Jewish side of trying to change things and make things better. I'm sensing this, like, push to, you know, get to the tipping point of where, you know, business and awakening coexist, where, you know, where the world becomes a better place. And I don't know, part of me has this, I've been sensing into this new space of, like, if we don't have the poison, then we don't have the cure. If we don't have the darkness, we don't have the light, you know. And it reminds me of, like, hand sanitizers, of, like, how, you know, people got all crazy about hand sanitizers and killing every single germ on the body, and then that just made people more prone to illness. And I'm wondering if you sense into that, if that Buddhist side of, like, just accepting the suffering, and how that balances with this want or need to ameliorate or obliterate the suffering.
Wow. Yeah, that's a very insightful question. I didn't know that word in Greek. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, man, it's interesting. You know, the word guru, actually, it has so many meanings, but one of the meanings is to move from dark to light. It's actually what our logo is based off of, that concept. And can you have the light without the dark? You know, that's such a good question. I don't know that I have the answer for that on this call, but what a fun topic to ponder. I mean, yes, I believe that there's a great service in letting someone do something kind for you. The best I usually feel in my life is when, you know, I'm feeling gratitude or giving. That for me, that it and I mean, love kind of pervades both of those things in a huge way. But you know, giving is, I mean, to let someone truly give to you, and for you not to be, you know, feeling guilty and all these kinds of things for taking, but just really like receive. I mean, there's a whole art to receiving. You know, that's a kindness in itself, I think. And, you know, yeah, there is a lot of suffering on the planet right now. I mean, the short, you know, term, you know, person in me person wants to kind of heal and fix right now. I see someone who's hungry. I want to feed them, you know, and then you back up from it. Like I work with this other nonprofit. I'm on the advisors for Conscious Alliance. They do hunger alleviation in America, specifically Native American reservations. And they, you know, have given like 5 million pounds of food to these Native American reservations that are, they're hungry and some of the poorest places on the country. It's a really sad kind of state of living. And there's a part of me that backs up and says, wait a second, shouldn't we be like teaching the, you know, how to create businesses that can then bring in wealth and food and money and things like that? And you go out there. I mean, I went to Pine Ridge and, you know, you show up for Thanksgiving. You want to bring them a turkey. You're not wanting to teach them how to do, you know, their arts and crafts and then sell and things like that. It's, you know, a sad state in some areas. So, you know, it's definitely a balance. I think, you know, the way the world is set up, I mean, you know, for those of you that saw, this is what the whole Star Wars, you know, series is about. You know, the dark and the light. And I saw that last movie. I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but I saw that last movie and I was thinking, God, this is such an amazing, I mean, this guy was so genius in coming up with this whole fantastical world. And really, if you watch that movie, the base of it is you cannot have the light without the dark. So thank you for the question. I'm leave it open-ended, but really, really insightful.
Yeah, you know, since you bring up movies, in our last Awaken Circle, Piers, you brought up the movie Inside Out, and I don't know if you've seen that, the animated film, and there's a similar
thing. I did, yeah, great movie.
Yeah, where you know, part of us wants no sadness, right? Like, just joy all the time. But I think that movie really brought out that sadness is unnecessary and functional and to be embraced in certain ways. And I was listening to an interview with the director, and he said that, you know, when he did his research on that, he researched with Paul Ekman, and Paul Ekman found that sadness actually brings people together. You know, that it's the emotion that causes community. And I was like, wow, like, give me some more sadness, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm just, you know, it's just one of those things. I know it's not an answerable question, but I love that you brought up that whole thing of poison and medicine.
And I love that you brought up Paul Ekman. I met him at the Dalai Lama's 80th birthday this summer. I'm actually having a meeting with them this week to discuss how we might bring some of his work with some of the other funders and partners that we're working with. So definitely synchronized here on the call.
beautiful, Jared. Thank you so much for your service and the work that you do and just sharing.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the call and the question. We have an individual that just wrote in and said, you know, please share my gratitude with Jared for this inspiring call and invite him to visit the KindSpring community online at kindspring.org to experience heart-first people making impact on our world through small acts of kindness. You know, and this comes from Michelle Rosen, a giver of love or a giver of good vibes and a giver of strength. And so just passing on her positive vibes to you there, Jared, as well.
Well, thanks so much. I'll definitely check it out. It sounds amazing.
And you know, one of the things, you know, so yeah, it was interesting. You had brought up your wife, you know, a couple of times through the call, and I'm curious how her journey, has it sort of taken a similar path as yours, or has it converged similarly? I'm just kind of curious to see how that's worked out, because you know, sometimes for partners they move in a similar path, and other times it looks like they're going in different directions, even though they do ultimately end up converging. And so would love for you to share a little bit about that.
Sure. Yes. You know, I think for us, and that's a great question. I mean, like I said, I think that for me, the spiritual converging with the personal, and a lot of my, I think more practice and spiritual work is done in union. You know, we're like a double helix or something. We kind of come out, we cruise in together. We both, you know, she's become a huge part of the Social Venture Network. She actually does the yoga. She does yoga for big conferences and all kinds of things, and the mindfulness sessions. And so she does the yoga in the mornings at SVN. And she comes to the Ram Dass retreats. And so we've, and like I said, she, you know, converted to Judaism. So we've really, you know, kind of come together. I think that's actually, it's funny because we're very different, my wife and I. She's very musical, likes to explore kind of the more artistic side. I'm kind of more energy, you know, a jock, like I said. We have where we come together is in our spirituality, and I think for any, you know, couple, my only couple's advice I give on here at all is to find that place, is to find a place where you can come together at the heart and around the spiritual, you know, side of your life, rather than just kind of the activities. And things like that. But yeah, it's been amazing to watch her grow with this organization. They're doing amazing work, you know. I mean, our country is so overprescribed on, you know, different drugs and things to calm kids down, and really I feel like that's done more for the parents than the kids. She's found a way to really, you know, help that with that base level of you know, mindfulness to kind of equip kids at an early age with the tools and the coping mechanisms to work through some of the stresses that they're going to have. We do a lot of this work together. We really enjoy kind of, you know, going to different workshops and seeing different teachers and learning. We're both kind of seekers and that sort.
That's great. Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. I'm going to hand it over to Birju. I think he has one question he wants to ask you before we close out for the day.
Yes. Thank you, Amit. So if we were to flip the camera around, Jared, Service Space as a whole is a community of many thousands of folks who hold, I think, similar intentions to where you're coming from. And so, I'm curious how we can be of service to you. What can we be doing to further your cause?
Oh, well, you know, I think, you know, tune in to some of these teachers maybe that I've mentioned. I mean, you know, different teachers speak to different people at different points in their journey. I think, you know, what gives me the most joy is to watch, you know, people like Ram Dass and the Love Server Member Foundation continue to grow. When I came in and started working with them, you know, 5-6 years ago, they were kind of figuring out how to show up digitally, you know, like I think a lot of people are doing now. Now they have these amazing communities, amazing podcasts and retreats. Like I said, there's this amazing retreat coming up in Maui in April, and I think just tuning into stuff like that and supporting organizations like that, they continue to do the work they do, You know, if you're an upcoming entrepreneur or interested in conscious business or triple bottom line business, you know, where kind of people, profit, and planet meet, Social Venture Network might be a great place to come to. You know, as far as Guru, we're, you know, you can find us online at weareguru.com. I mean, I guess you kind of get what we do with it. How it manifests in the world is we do, we build brands, we build websites, and we build communities. You know, purpose-driven. That's about it. It's really nice to be with you all. I do have one last request, if I may. It will probably take 1 minute. I have a very dear friend right now that yesterday just found out that he has brain cancer. He's my age. He's 34 years old. Mm. I don't want to say his name here. I'll just say if maybe everyone on the call could just take a 30-second moment of silence to send some love to Fidget, I would really appreciate it.
Absolutely. That actually, you know, we actually finish out our calls typically with a small moment of silence, and it would be our honor to keep your friend in mind and many of those other that are out there dealing with such difficulty. And so we'll hold a collective minute of silence in gratitude, and then and hold this individual in our thoughts. And then after that, I'm going to just kind of take everyone off of hold, and then we just like to say just a big thank you to Jared, and we'll just wrap up the call from there. And, you know, if we could all on the count of three maybe say just a large thank you to Jared, we'd be very appreciative. And so just have everyone here off of mute. And on the count of three, that'd be great. One, two, and three.
Deep gratitude.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deep gratitude.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And we hope you can join us next week for our call. Thank you very much. Hope everyone has a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.